This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
Ahead on the Joseph Smith Papers.
How do we know that that was, in fact, almost a word-for-word dictation?
This time, you ask the questions.
Is there some sort of consensus as to what discovery was most exciting?
Character traits, good or bad, that you've discovered.
How this information was put together.
Is that because he was poorly educated?
In a special edition forum, scholars from the Joseph Smith Papers Project take spontaneous questions about the prophet, his papers, and the ambitious effort to bring them to light. The Joseph Smith Papers Forum, coming up.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
KJAZ Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
As you know, for the last 2 years, we've presented a carefully constructed program centered around the life, the teachings, and the influence of Joseph Smith the prophet. Well, today we're going to do something just a little differently. Some time ago, we invited a number of the scholars who regularly contribute to this program to come here, the Conference Center in Salt Lake City. And then we invited the public to come and meet those scholars and ask any question they wanted. It was an afternoon forum. Now, in that audience were a number of students from the University of Utah as well as faculty members. The moderator for this session is Ron Esplin.
My name is Ron Esplin. I'm managing editor of the Joseph Smith Papers Project, and with Dean Jesse and Richard Bushman, serve as one of the three general editors of our publications.
As you will quickly appreciate, during the course of the forum, Ron Esplin is engaged in almost every aspect of the Joseph Smith Papers and was a central figure in its official startup in 2001. He will call on an experienced group of scholars, all of whom are co-editing one or more volumes of the Joseph Smith Papers. We'll introduce them to you along the way. Now, the first question.
I was just curious to know how this project got started. What were the things that motivated you all to start compiling these papers?
And I'm going to take that one. Most of the questions I won't, but in the absence of Dean Jesse, my fellow general editor, I'm going to sit in for him. Back in the 1970s, the Church Historical Department had just been organized and was in a broad period of professionalization of the library, the archives, the history writing. As part of that, Leonard Arrington was appointed as church historian, and Dean Jesse, who had worked for the old church historian's office before the reorganization, came aboard the history division. In consultation with Leonard Arrington, Dean Jesse was assigned to work on Joseph Smith and Brigham Young documents. So from 1972 on, a primary focus of Dean Jesse was to gather the materials that could one day be part of a Joseph Smith Papers project. Brother Jesse had been aware, as an American and as somebody interested in history, of the Thomas Jefferson Papers. As Robin said, the first volume was published in 1950. The work started in the 1940s. And he envisioned very early that we ought to have for Joseph Smith what the nation would begin to have now for Thomas Jefferson and eventually Benjamin Franklin and many other early Americans. And he laid the foundation that we're built upon. So this project grew out of Dean Jesse's work. And beginning in 2000, we assembled a group of people, some of whom are here today with us, to begin to discuss a broader project.
I'm sure you all have different opinions about this, but is there some sort of consensus as to what discovery was most exciting?
I think there probably is, even though there's a great deal of new important information, and it may be the moment of the day when you ask us that, what the answer would be. But Bob Woodford could probably describe what we would, as a group, say is among our most important new offerings.
Robert Woodford taught Doctrine and Covenants and LDS church history in the church educational system for more than 40 years. He is co-editor of Volumes 1 and 2 of the Document Series and Volume 1 of the Revelations and Translation Series.
President Hinckley authorized the inventory of the documents that the First Presidency had, and among those, they found a manuscript book full of revelations. It's called A Book of Commandments and Revelations, and it is the manuscript book that Oliver Cowdery and John Whitmer took to Missouri in November of 1831 to print the Book of Commandments. And the there's editing within the book showing where they've made some alterations, where they put in versification, preparing it for the Book of Commandments. The only revelation not in that manuscript book that would be found in the Book of Commandments is what is now Section 12 of the Doctrine and Covenants, the revelation to Joseph Knight. Then this book was later taken to back to Kirtland, and with another book, its companion volume, the Kirtland Revelation Book, they printed the 1835 edition of the Doctrine and Covenants. Next to the Book of Mormon manuscript, this is probably the most significant document that's found in our church library. And the next volume of the Joseph Smith Papers will feature this volume and the Kirtland Revelation Book.
I wanted to ask, all this information that you took to prepare the series, how were the papers compiled? Was it through journals of members of the church? Was it through newspapers of the time, relatives of the prophet Joseph Smith? Or how this information was put together to come up with the Joseph Smith's papers?
So the question is, we have our body of documents, and we are doing a great deal of work around them. Where do we go to find the information to better understand the documents and to present to you a document that doesn't look like it came from a strange time and place, but you can really understand it? Joe, would you mind addressing that question?
Joseph Dorowski has been with the Joseph Smith Papers since 2002. He serves as a co-editor of Volume 4 of the Documents Series.
The beginning point for our work on any of this material is the documents themselves that come from Joseph Smith. And to an extent, we have to be very careful to allow those documents really to speak for themselves as much as possible. We don't want to embellish them. We don't want to interpret them or suggest meanings that are not inherent in the document themselves. But then as we work with them, it's very important that we offer some kind of context for why we have this material and what the circumstances were related to their being produced. Some of the materials, it's kind of obvious as to why we might have what we have in front of us, journals. Well, Joseph Smith kept a journal. That's partially true. At times, he even personally wrote entries in a journal, but for much of the time, clerks kept these records for him. We'll have journals with day-by-day entries. Does that mean that someone every day sat down and wrote a journal entry? No, sometimes they caught up. Sometimes they got behind. They had notes. They drew upon those notes. Sometimes even in the journals, they incorporate letters, minutes of meetings, and things of this sort. We have correspondence, but sometimes we don't have complete correspondence. We'll have a letter, and it'll allude to a previous letter, but we won't have that material in hand. Then we have to look for other sources that might shed some light on it. And in those cases, it might be a journal or a record kept by someone who was either close to Joseph Smith or involved in the events that led to the correspondence. We're fortunate to have many letters from members of the church and non-members during Joseph Smith's lifetime that shed some light on these things, newspaper accounts, the publications of the church itself, the newspapers that the church published, and then, of course, other newspaper publications, some friendly, some adversarial in nature. But all of these things shed light on the material that we're working with. Even those who were adversarial can be very important for us understanding context and circumstance. The further you get, further away you get from the time of Joseph Smith, the more challenging it is to make proper use of retrospective accounts, reminiscences, and so on.
In reading Volume 1, Joseph Smith's actual records are shown there in bold. And in a lot of cases, he adds letters to words that we don't use today. Is that because he was poorly educated, or was it part of the time prior to, I think, 1906, before the standardization of spelling was attempted? There were a lot of different spellings, and is that the case? And if it was, is that something worth noting?
Good question. Richard Jensen, who's with us, was one of the editors of the journal's Volume 1, and therefore is intimately familiar with some of the Joseph Smith holographs. Let's ask Richard to comment on that.
Richard Jensen is a senior writer and research historian and a review editor for the Joseph Smith Papers. He is a co-editor of Volume 1 of the journal series.
I think you've put your finger on probably the main point, that spelling had not been standardized at that time. Sometimes it's claimed that Joseph Smith was not a good writer, and I think sometimes we sort of set that up as a straw man that we can knock down, saying he couldn't write, therefore the Book of Mormon, for example, had to be inspired. Joseph Smith was a verbal person. Writing was not his thing, but I think he did quite well. And his spelling isn't that bad compared with others of his contemporaries. Personally, I enjoy seeing the way people really wrote these things rather than cleaning them up. I'd like to see more of that from our historical figures in the past.
Richard has suggested that he was better than some of his contemporaries. I'm a Brigham Young scholar, so what I'm going to say is not meant to denigrate Brigham Young in any fashion. But Joseph Smith could spell a lot better than Brigham. And I'm not a handwriting expert like, for example, Stephen Harper and Robin Jensen, but I could recognize Brigham Young's materials because of the creativity of his spelling long before I could recognize his handwriting. It's interesting. If English was a phonetic language, these folks would have known how to spell. But there's no way to sound out how to spell in English. You either learn it in school, or you have to improvise.
A couple of interrelated questions about authorship. Recognizing that Joseph Smith himself did not actually write a lot of these papers, I'm curious to understand how the various scholars actually determined who wrote what. I mean, if it's just handwriting or if there's other things that went into it, number one. And then number two, and probably more important question that I have is on... authorship is, you know, some documents Joseph Smith wrote, so we know those were his ideas, his thoughts. Others are claimed to have been dictated by him to somebody, and I guess how do we know that that was in fact almost a word-for-word dictation to a scribe, or in other cases where it may have been a scribe who was taking down notes for a journal and put his or his own thoughts into it, and then you have the editorials that someone else's ideas completely. And Joseph Smith either put his name on it or maybe someone else put his name on it.
Two-part question. I'm going to ask two people to respond. Let's have Robin Jensen first and then Professor Harper.
Robin Jensen specializes in document and transcription analysis. He's a project archivist and a co-editor of the Revelations and Translations series of the papers.
You've really asked an important question and one that we struggle with almost daily. The question of authorship is simple when it's in Joseph Smith's handwriting. Anything other than that, it gets complicated, which is a lot of our material. There are certain cases where in diaries we have someone saying, I wrote such and such a piece for Joseph Smith. And that's fairly clear that it's kind of a commission. Joseph Smith is asking Phelps, for instance, to write something in Nauvoo. There's a few references in his journal that says that he's dictating, or that he can't write in his journal because he's sick. I think that's a reference. That his throat's not, he can't talk very well. So there are small clues. We wish that there were more evidence as to where the ideas are coming from, whether it's a complete dictation or there's an outline of notes. With some of the editorials, we're pretty sure the ideas come from Joseph Smith. The writing itself's coming from the individual. But again, it's a lot of guesswork, and that's where we provide a lot of the information in the source notes and the historical introductions to the documents.
I can't let his guesswork comment stand unanswered. It is not guesswork. We are doing a very thorough and professional job. Joseph Smith did an interview with the Pittsburgh Gazette reporter late in his life, and he said this, "I don't always get a revelation when I want one, but I never gave a revelation to this people that was not a revelation." Now, I will say we do not know as much as we'd like to know, but we're not telling you something we don't know. If we don't have solid evidence, it's going to be indicated to you what we do know and what we don't know. And as Robin said, and this I just want to underscore because he does have the real message that we want you to take away from this, read the source note, read the introduction. Every document will have both, and you'll get a good sense of what we know and what we don't know about why this is a Joseph Smith document and who may have written it for him if it wasn't himself.
When I say guesswork, this is how I'm approaching it. After 20, 30 hours of research, I make a guess. I say, here are all the scenarios, here are all the evidence, here's the most likely scenario, but it's absolutely not for sure. So thank you for the clarification there.
And in the Revelations volume, we have color-coded all the scribes, and one color says unknown. And Robin's instructions are, if you don't know, it's in that color. We're not into just wild speculation. We make our best professional guess, if you want to put it that way, judgment, and then leave you with the information that we can provide.
I had a lot to say before Ron ruled out wild speculation.
Stephen Harper is co-editor on volumes in the Documents Series and Revelations and Translations Series of the Joseph Smith Papers. He's also an associate professor of LDS Church History and Doctrine at BYU.
I guess I'd like to comment on what I think. I hear voices. So, as Robin said, you spend enough time with these documents and you begin to be able to discern literary voices. The first thing I want to say is that the revelations are not in Joseph Smith's voice. I think that's very interesting. He believed that. He marveled at his own revelations. It's not just him. There were others. I think of one instance where William McClellan was writing while Joseph Smith was dictating a revelation. It was on the 29th of October, 1831. And McClellan's journal entry for that day says, "The Lord condescended to hear my prayer and give me a revelation of his will through his prophet or seer Joseph. And these are the words I wrote from his mouth." And then William McClellan writes in his journal, Doctrine and Covenants, section 66. That's a copy. We think we have the original of that one, which is extraordinarily rare. You probably count on all your fingers the original dictation manuscripts of Joseph's revelations, but in this case, I think that we've got the original. McClellan wrote it earlier that day as Joseph dictated it. So there's one instance that you've got. Let's talk for just a minute about the lectures on faith, a somewhat controversial subject about authorship. And I don't hear Joseph's voice in the lectures on faith. Of all the Joseph Smith documents in the whole corpus, none of them sound like that. It sounds like Sidney Rigdon. It sounds like systematic theology. Now, having said that, the lectures on faith count as Joseph Smith documents. They're published under his direction. They're put into the 1835 Doctrine and Covenants.
Also on this area of authorship is Alex Smith. Alex specializes in the Nauvoo period. He's editing volumes in the Journal Series.
sometimes we'll have a journal entry, for instance, that we feel very confidently is dictated by Joseph, even later on in his journals. The 16th and 23rd August 1842 entries, for instance, in his journal in the Book of the Law of the Lord, Joseph Smith is in hiding at the time. William Clayton is writing down these journal entries. Joseph, because of the situation that he's in, wants to remember the names of those friends and members of the church who have been faithful to him. And the way that the journal entries read, it is very clear that these are coming directly from Joseph. The wording is very specific, lengthy passages, you know, where he is remembering names. And then at the end of an entry, William Clayton will even say, at this point, Joseph makes an end of speaking. He will resume the subject a week later, something along those lines. Sometimes it's clear, but usually we find that a lot of the writing being done at the time is not by him, but by his contemporaries, people who are close to him.
It was just commented on about the personality traits, the character traits of Joseph Smith. I'd like to know what they are, the stories maybe that have been found, character traits, good or bad, that you've discovered as you've collected these papers.
Let's have a couple of short comments. I'd like to start with Alex, who's worked on the Nauvoo era, to talk a little bit about personality traits that he may see, and then we'll invite one or two of the others to comment as well.
Some of the fun types of stories that you see about Joseph written by his clerks include things like Joseph, at a time while he is serving as mayor of the city of Nauvoo, part of the responsibilities of the mayor, as written in the Articles of Incorporation of the city, are that he is a chief justice. And so he sits over the mayor's court, often sits over the municipal court, the appellate court above that. But one of the stories that's recorded in his own journal that I don't know that he would have recorded himself given the choice was that during the middle of a court case that he was over, that he was judging, out in the street, a fight broke out. And so he ran outside and there were a lot of bystanders. He separated the two people fighting and as Willard Richards records in his journal, nobody is allowed to fight in this city but me, said the mayor. And so kind of gives us some insights into just a type of fun personality. But I think that one thing stands out character-wise for me, at least in his later life, and that's a very openness, directness, honesty with people, quick to forgive and quick to rebuke when he saw a need for that.
Kay Dorowski is a co-editor of Volume 3 in the document series of the Joseph Smith Papers and supervises student research assistants on the project from her post at BYU.
Another example that's very revealing about Joseph Smith's personality is incidents that took place in the late fall of 1835 with him and his brother William from October to December 1835. At this time, William was an apostle. He was younger than Joseph. And, of course, Joseph was president of the church. But they were still brothers, and they were still in their 20s. And they reached the point where it escalated to a physical confrontation that was in the presence of others. And then William wrote a letter. Joseph wrote a letter back. And it's just very revealing about the family dynamics and the, well, I would have hit you and I would have won, except I couldn't get my coat off. But there was also great anguish that there was this division in the family. And it wasn't resolved until New Year's Day when Father Smith, Joseph Smith Sr., called a meeting of his family and said, enough's enough, we've got to settle this. But in Joseph's journal, you can capture that they knew that the endowment was coming, the dedication of the Kirtland Temple, the solemn assembly, and they needed this settled so that there could be peace and harmony in, within all the church and within Kirtland.
Elder Marlon K. Jensen, church historian, is the one to whom this project reports. He's our executive director for this project. He tells a story of going to a stake visit, and after the conference, accompanying the stake president to visit a few shut-ins that could not have made it to conference. And they alight at the doorstep of an elderly woman who invites them in, and she's sitting in her easy chair, cradling in her arms the journals, one of the Joseph Smith Papers. And she is just thrilled to come across that story of Joseph and William fighting. It made him seem real. It made her feel like there was hope for her, because sometimes in her life she had fought with her sister. And it was a delightful experience, thought Elder Jensen, to see how meaningful that little glimpse into Joseph Smith's personality was for this elderly lady.
On the next Joseph Smith Papers.
In view of the Mark Hoffman episode of the 80s, is there a danger here of being misled by forgeries? And if so, what safeguards are in place to prevent that?
The Forum, Part 2.
I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.